All right, number 18 on the agenda, Western South Dakota trout stocking. Jeremy Kintz, I believe you're in the room. Good morning.
Morning, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling, Jeremy Kintz, Area Fisheries Supervisor here in Rapid City.
Just going to talk to you today about a graduate research project we had going looking at our stocked rainbow trout product. So I do have the great benefit that you all have had the opportunity to tour our hatcheries in a somewhat recent manner and have a little bit of understanding of our trout stocking programs. So the sort of the bread and butter of our trout stocking program is what we call put and take trout fisheries. And that's just a fancy way of saying we stock them, anglers harvest them. These fish are grown to a large size in our hatcheries. And when we stock them, their expectation is that they contribute to the fishery basically immediately. Anglers catch them and they're able to be harvested right away. So this is, you know, very different from, say, our walleye stocking program, where we stock those fish at a small size, they grow, and then they contribute to the fishery, you know, 2-3 years down the road. So I know that, you know, Mike Barnes has talked a little bit about the economics of our trout program. But, you know, there is a sizable investment in these fish. They're in the hatchery system for approximately a year before we stock them out. The trout stocking program accounts for about 10% of our annual fishery budget. The number I received from Mike Barnes, our hatchery program administrator, was that we stocked out 215,000 pounds of trout this year. So like I said, you know, the contribution to the fishery of these trout, they make an instant impact. You know, we can see that the anglers are out there. They see the stocking truck go by and they're out there, they're fishing. And, you know, we see this coming back to us in angler satisfaction. Anglers are very, very satisfied when they're catching, you know, high numbers of fish. Like I said, you know, a sizable investment from the department into this program. So when, as fisheries managers, these fish go out of the hatchery, then it becomes, you know, on our shoulders to find out what's happening with these fish. And so when we talk about trout mortality, we basically group that into two categories. Fisheries mortality and natural mortality. And there's a few ways that we can, you know, kind of get at those different sources of mortality. The biggest one of those is what you see in this picture is an angler harvest survey. So we have a creel clerk at the lake talking to the anglers, asking them, you know, how many fish did you catch today? What was your satisfaction? So as you might imagine, it's quite a bit easier to get at the fishing mortality. It's pretty easy to ask an angler, you know, how many fish he caught, but asking a fish whether it's stressed is rather difficult. So the natural mortality side of it, you know, it takes a little more work at getting at some of those things, environmental stressors, predation, different factors that kind of play into natural mortality. Now, angler harvest surveys have kind of always been our way to assess fishing mortality, angler harvest. One thing that's kind of come about more recently is catch and release mortality. So catch and release with trout is one of those species that catch and release has kind of become a popular method. And so we do have to factor in that there may be some mortality attributed to that practice. So this particular study, we looked at four different Black Hills small reservoirs: Iron Creek Lake up by Spearfish, Dalton Lake, Horse Thief, and Bismarck. And so you can see that you know, they're distributed in a north-south fashion along the Black Hills, and they all have a few things in common. The first thing is that they have a single access point, and that's important because if the anglers only have one way in and out, then we have a very good chance of catching that angler on their way out from the lake, being able to survey them. They're all less than 10 acres in size, and each of those has a campground near the lake. So these creel surveys happened in 2018 and 2019. Dalton and Horse Thief Lake in 2018, Bismarck and Iron Creek Lake in 2019. Of those surveys, we made 840 individual surveys. So, you know, that may be, you know, multiple actual anglers being surveyed multiple times, but 840 actual interviews. So some of the questions that we asked during this survey to sort of, you know, get at these sources of mortality, how satisfied were you with your fishing trip? And that's basically just to get a handle on, you know, whether we're providing a good service to our customers. And then how many fish did you catch? Of those, how many did you harvest? How many did you release? And then we asked a very specific question, which was, what type of gear did you use? And that's to get at this catch and release mortality. And if you look at this graph, you can see that when it comes to catch and release mortality, a very specific type of fishing, that is bait fishing, it results in much higher catch and release mortality. And that's generally associated with the fact that a fish is more likely to swallow the hook or get deep hook set with bait rather than a lure that's moving through the water. They have to chase it, or a fly. So kind of getting into the results section here, across these four small reservoirs, 11,000 rainbow trout were harvested during our survey. And you can see these percentages. So just for reference, you know, we see numbers like 50%, 52%, 72%. Back in 2016, we did a survey on Pactola. When we did that that creel survey on Pactola, our highest estimate was 25% angler harvest. And so that's really where things kind of came around with this project is, you know, we wanted to know what's happening with this investment where we're putting these fish out in the water. And if we're not accounting for 75% of those fish, that's something that we need to improve upon. And so, you know, this was very encouraging to see, you know, some numbers like this where, you know, we're much higher up over the 50% in three of the four lakes. So this is just a graph showing harvest across our different months in our different reservoirs. And the trend basically holds with what we've seen generally in the past. You know, fishing kind of ramps up into those summer months. As you get into the dog days of summer in August, you know, fishing kind of tails off out into the fall. So now looking at catch and release mortality, and this really is the first time that we've been able to put numbers to the catch and release mortality side of things. And so, you know, if you look at these numbers, fairly sizable percentage of fish can be attributed to catch and release mortality, you know, 20, 28, 24%. You know, that's a sizable number that we weren't accounting for in the past. And so that was one of the big results that, we saw here was, you know, this is something that we probably need to take into consideration and factor in. So looking at our, total angling related mortality. So I talked about, you know, fishing mortality, natural mortality, just angling related mortality. We're accounting for, you know, 75 plus percent of our trout stockings into those reservoirs in, three of the four reservoirs. So, you know, this graph in that that fourth column there, it says carryover. Even though the expectation is that, you know, these fish do get caught and harvested, we do know that some are going to, you know, live from, you know, 1 year into the next. And we can get that number by marking fish, and then out of our recaptures, we can estimate our carryover. So when we look at harvest, catch and release mortality, and then accounting for a carryover of some fish into the next year, now we're accounting for almost 80 plus percent in three of the four lakes. Now, when I say three of the four, Dalton, that reservoir, you know, is kind of the outlier here. And basically the reason for that is if you look at your angling pressure, so number of angler hours on that water body, Dalton was about a quarter or less of what the other three reservoirs were. So if we saw greater or on par with the other three as far as fishing pressure, we'd probably see that number come into alignment with those other three. So I'm going to talk about habitat for a second. So you guys hear a lot about habitat. It's often terrestrial. When we talk about aquatic habitat, there's a couple of things that come into play for trout specifically. The first thing is oxygen levels. So the sediments at the bottom of the lake are typically anoxic. There's no oxygen. So as we get into the summer months, we start to get a squeeze there of, you know, low dissolved oxygen down in the bottom layers of the water column. And so as you can see here, that blue zone has become diminished. The second thing that factors in is high surface temperatures. So high surface temperatures at the top of the water column, you start to squeeze that down even more. And so this is what we call in the fisheries world stratification. So as our lake stratifies, there's less available habitat. And so that blue area is what we call relative available habitat. So this is a graph showing the relationship between angling mortality and relative available habitat. As habitat decreased through the summer months, our harvest went up. So as you see here on the left of that graph, when we get low available habitat, the angling mortality went up. So this is basically a function of those fish, you know, probably experiencing greater levels of stress. And so there was actually some work done as well that showed that while those fish were experiencing this squeeze of that relative available habitat, there was a higher percentage of fish with empty stomachs. And so that may be attributed to the fact that they're, you know, chasing down food and getting harvested by anglers. So just to summarize some of this, you know, like I said, you know, when we back in 2016, when we got those results from Pactola and saw that 25%, you know, we really looked at that and said, we need to do better. We need to have a better understanding of what's happening with this investment. And so these results are pretty good results that we're showing, you know, better than 80% in three of our four reservoirs. We can attribute to fishing mortality. And like I said, this was really the first study that we were able to attribute catch and release mortality and factor that into our estimates. We did get an understanding of how, you know, that squeeze of habitat affects our angling mortality. Now, the next step in all of this is, you know, trying to translate this into those larger reservoirs. And I can tell you, you know, the challenge that's set before us is really those access points. When you think about a reservoir like Pactola, Sheridan, Deerfield are larger, there's multiple access points. Boat angling becomes a larger percentage of your activity on the lake. And so those are some things that, you know, is going to be a challenge for us to meet, to be able to understand what's really driving our harvest and get a better understanding of our investment in those three reservoirs. Because as you can imagine, Pactola, Sheridan, Deerfield, those three reservoirs account for a large percentage of those 215,000 pounds of fish that we stock this year. So with that, I'll solicit any questions.
Yeah, thank you. Very interesting questions. Secretary Roblin.
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy. Quick question on the detection probability of those catch and release mortalities. How are we quantifying that? I mean, the angler throws the fish back in the water. How are we detecting that mortality after it's back in the water?
Excuse the chair. Yeah, Secretary Roman. So there was a study done a few years back, and that's where the numbers in that graph came from, the bait, the spin fishing, the fly fishing. And so the question on the question on the survey, you know, how many fish did you release? We get the number of fish they released, and then which methodology of fishing they used. And then, you know, just extrapolating the numbers of, you know, bait fishing and the mortality associated with that.
So just to clarify then, we are using previous research findings from a stocking survival study, and they use probably telemetry data then to determine detection, because I'm still confused about how they determined mortality after the fish was released without marking the fish. I'm assuming they marked the fish then in that system or that research.
Through the chair. I couldn't answer that specifically. I'd have to go back and look at that study, the research that was done previously. I imagine that you're correct. They would have had to mark those fish to determine mortality. So it is an estimate based on, you know, numbers seen from a previous study.
Interesting. On so Dalton, certainly it was kind of an eye opener for me that as habitat or that stratification intensified and reduced the availability for habitat for those fish, actually the harvest had an inverse effect and it climbed. So unique how that happens. Whereas, is that the situation with Dalton where the fish just had the more of that the entire depth and a little harder to catch that way or something?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think that is one of the factors at Dalton as well. Yeah.
Commissioner Bees.
My same thoughts on Dalton Lake. I've been around it quite a bit, but 31% harvest rate on the amount stocked, 11% mortality, and 1% carryover is a lot different from every other lake. When does it, maybe that lake ain't that suitable for trout? Maybe it's look at the different fishery for there than trout fishery. Does you ever come into thought?
Through the chair. Commissioner Beast, that is one thing that, you know, certainly comes into play when, you know, we look at these fisheries. Certainly, you know, some of our Black Hills reservoirs, they feel that temperature and oxygen squeeze, you know, much more than some of our others. And, in that instance, I think that, you know, when you do get that squeeze that's just too much, we do have to start to consider how suitable is this reservoir for trout fishing, and maybe start looking into, you know, maybe panfish or bass or, you know, other species that are maybe a little more adapted to an environment like that.
Yeah, Commissioner Whitmire, I have two on the four bodies that you studied here. With the stockings, you know, as far as a percentage of what was stocked, if you had three stockings in Dalton, for example, is that all kind of a constant for what you did, or are they all just like one stocking per year?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this study was done in a specific way that we did just do one stocking in order to just see that decline over time of our fishery. So that, you know, as harvest increased, you know, we see that tail off. Typically these reservoirs are stocked, you know, more periodically through the summer. But for the study purposes, we did it just as a single stocking in the spring.
Thank you. Yeah, the put and take, I guess, took me down that how often do you need to put, I guess. So thank you. All right, anything more for Jeremy? Commissioner Bees.
How much do trash fish come into effect on trout stocking, such as rock bass and suckers? And how much does that come into play on survival or taking up habitat for the fish that we're stocking?
Through the chair. Commissioner Beast, that's certainly a factor in some of our reservoirs, you know, other species and, you know, particularly with Deerfield and rock bass, we know that, you know, that's an issue for our anglers. You know, as far as the trout go, typically what we've seen in diet studies is that there's not a lot of diet overlap between those species. Rock bass in particular are pretty specialized feeder. And so they're not always utilizing the same food sources. And so when it comes down to you know, the survival of our stocked trout, those fish really aren't having a great impact on our stocked fish.
So what do we use as a control mechanism for those type of species of fish?
Chair. Commissioner Beast, you know, when you have a species like rock bass, you've got a few different tools in your toolbox, so to speak. One of those would be mechanical removal. You can net them out, you can electrofish them, you know, basically that's our staff going out there trying to collect as many of those fish and getting them out of the lake. What we've seen in the literature and in other research is that it's very ineffective. The other tool would be chemicals, but the issue with that is, you know, you're going to affect your other fish populations as well, and so it becomes a delicate balance of trying to you know, handle those other species to better manage for your primary.
Is there any natural predators that can we use to control those?
Through the chair. Commissioner Beast, there is you know, some natural predators. You know, bass, for instance, you know, would probably put some predation pressure on a small rock bass, just like they do with bluegills or other panfish species. There is a way to, you know, go about it through a predation methodology. I guess the biggest consideration is, you know, would the lake be able to sustain a population of the predator fish large enough to put the predation pressure and get the results that you're looking for?
Well, thank you, Jeremy. You know, all of these things that you bring here just brings all these things to mind, you know, the effectiveness of the stocking. And that's great to see now you got a better read on how to handle those other reservoirs and everything. And it's good to see the background work. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.